But he knows where it's at. He knows where it's at. He knows where the... Where it's
right.
Not... They're not ignorant. They sense... Doesn't matter where they are, they know in their mind, in the back of their mind, they know where it is. Where the hatred is directed towards. It's directed towards the real Jew. That is the source of hatred.
Yes.
There are... And that has to do with the question that Richard raised also. See, the question that Richard raised also, the there's two, really, what, we asked the question before. So first it says, my daughter over with some melach. So then it says, ki gid lam ha-shehu yudhi, vayar homan keim marachai peim ashtachav alo, vayimor lehoman chema, right? Then again later, two prakam later, when he was invited to the Mishnah, vayetzei homan bayom was mechot away. Becheros Haman is Mordechai b'shar Melech v'lokom v'lozom minu. You notice over here it doesn't say v'ena korea lo. It says v'lokom v'lozom. Which one was worse, by the way? Zor is worse. Kom is one thing, but Zor is worse. It means he didn't start, he was not affected. It says v'yimolei Haman al Mordechai chemo. You know, interesting thing. Before it says v'yimolei Haman chemo. Here it says v'yimolei Haman al Mordechai chemo. Why does it say al Mordechai chemo? What is it showing? The answer is that there are two hatreds that Amalek has towards the Jew. One hatred that Amalek has towards the Jew is the ideological hatred. That is the hatred of the ideology that the Jew represents and the fact that the Jew is an embodiment of the philosophy of Yadis. That's one hatred. Great hatred. That's the hatred that causes him to want to destroy the Jew from the face of the earth. But the second hatred is a hatred not just against the ideology of the Jew, but against the character of the Jew. The character of the Jew. See, what upset him so much the second time? He already passed the decree, and everybody knew the Jew's going to be destroyed. So you'd think at that point that you'd see some kind of a difference in Mordechai. After all, he knows he hasn't got long to live, and you'd think that some effect. But when he saw v'lokom v'lozom imenu, he saw he remains unaffected, that when he walks by, it's as if nobody walked by. Then, vayimole homon al Mordechai chema. It was the character of the Jew that they hate. That he couldn't tell. What was the whole thing? What was the Eitz Gavur? What did the Eitz Gavur? How did that satisfy him? What was the Eitz Gavur? What do you have to kill him tomorrow? Why kill him tomorrow? What does the Eitz Gavur make him? That bothers him, so bothers him. So what's the Eitz Gavur? The answer is, the Eitz Gavur is, that's the last recourse that they have. They want to say, we'll see how unaffected the Jew is when we hang him, when we kill him. Then we'll see how unaffected he is. That's why he was so mech tal bay, because he's so happy about that. That's why it's satisfied that egomania against the particular character of the Jew. There's two hatreds that Amalek has. The ideology and the character of the Jew. Because the Jew, of course, the Jew represents the ultimate in courage. The ultimate in courage is the Jew. Why is the Jew the ultimately courageous person? Because the Jew is the only person in the world that faces reality. And that takes the greatest courage. Okay. Now, in a different way. Now, you see, what was the problem? Now, this is where Esther came in. This is where Esther came in. Because Esther saw what's happening. Esther understood, after Mordechai explained to her, she understood what's going on. And she saw that Haman really, she knew what Haman was, and that Haman is trying to establish a whole new system, a new ideology, with himself as the ideological leader. Okay? He was supposed to be the leader of the movement. So she knew that there must be a person like that. There's got to be a certain amount of friction between him and Ahasuerus, because basically what he was trying to do was make Ahasuerus should be the political leader. Let him run the government. He's a political leader. But the ideological leader would be who? Would be Haman. That's basically what his move was. He was trying to set himself up as the ideological leader of the nation. That's what he tried to do. And that's, of course, that's what Mordechai warned them. Mordechai was warning them that he's not going to bow down to Haman, he's bowing down to an ideology. He's trying to become an ideological leader. So actually, what he wanted to do was to, he wanted to, his, he had an ingenious plan. And it was a very intelligent plan. The plan was that who really leads people? Not the person that has the power over them. The king doesn't really lead people. What leads people is a person that captures their emotions and really captures the inner heart of the people. The ideological leader is the most powerful force. Not the economic leader. So he was going to leave Achashverosh, let him be the economic leader, but I am going to be the ideological leader of the people. That would give him the most power. The most power. That was his idea. Now, Esther knew that Achashverosh was no dummy, and Achashverosh, when it came to himself, he was very, very smart, very clever when it came to himself, and as he knew, she knew that he knew what's going on, and that there's some kind of a friction here. So that's why she made this first party, where she didn't disclose exactly what she wants to do. She got his imagination going, and then he had a dream. Haman's trying to kill him. Haman's running off to the queen. He sensed already what Haman is. One person can read another person's feelings, their unconscious feelings. And he sensed already what Haman's objective was, you see. That's why that night, when he started to think there's something happening, a conspiracy. So he said, a conspiracy, and nobody tells me? So what's happening? I must be doing something wrong. So he opened up the Sefer Zecharos, and he said, let's see. In order for a king to have loyalty, to deserve loyalty, he has to reward those people who are loyal to him. So he said that, just a minute, Mordechai did something, I'm not rewarding him. So people are learning from this. It doesn't pay to be loyal to the king. He saved his life, and he got nothing. So that's why when Haman came in, and by the way, Haman was under the influence of a powerful emotion. The emotion at that moment was to destroy Mordechai because of the fact that he couldn't tolerate his character. And he came in that night. He came in very late. It was crazy. What is he going to do? But the answer is, the Gemara says, Gassinim mekalkelos es hashura. It means under the influence of the emotion of the hatred, he lost his whole his balance, his mental balance, his sense of priority. He figured, I'll go there, I'll see, maybe he's awake, maybe I can get in there. So he went there, and meantime Achashverosh already was going through, thinking, yeah, the fear is against him. So that's why he said, he knew very well. So what did Achashverosh say to him? He said, Meyer kaches alavush esus kasher dibat vasechein to leMordechai haYehudi. What does he mean, Mordechai haYehudi? He said, you really aren't doing this. You're not trying to destroy the Jews because of loyalty to me. That would be one thing. You want to be loyal. The way you presented it was very nice. But I see that this is becoming a whole part of your ideology. So now what happens? This is the way a person leads people. First he sets up an ideology, but an ideology in the minds of people is a dormant thing. It doesn't have any effect, because people aren't thinkers. You must give them something to do in order to act out the following of the ideology. So Achashverosh saw that Haman is very clever. What he's doing is he's using the anti-Semitism, he's arming the people in order to have him. He is the ideological head. And not only that, but now he's waging a war, a whole campaign against these people, which places him at the head of the whole army, the whole nation, in terms of their almost war. So he's acting out. He's giving the people something to do to actually make them a part of this ideology. Because you can't just with ideas alone, people don't move. You have to get them to move to action. So he's moving them to action, and therefore he is becoming actively, not potentially, but actually, he's becoming their leader. And they're going around, they're going to kill people at his command. So Achashverosh, that was Achashverosh's nightmare. He saw all of a sudden, he saw this person is using his power, his influence, to make himself the head of a whole ideology. And not only that, but this ideology has a campaign and a cause which he's now involved in performing, which makes it an active philosophy, which is dangerous, the most dangerous kind. So therefore, he says, Va'asechein leMordechai haYehudi. What does it mean? He says, if you really just worried about me, that's one thing. That's why I want to destroy the Jews. But over here, he says, you're setting yourself up as an ideology. I want you now to break your ideology. I don't want you to be an ideological leader. And what is the best method to demonstrate that the ideology is broken? Where he has to go in the Rehov here and say that Mordechai the Jew is really the great person that the king rewards. So that was Achashverosh's remedy for the problem of Haman. What was the remedy? He said to him in simple terms, you want to save my life, that's why I wanted to destroy the Jews, fine. But you're not going to be an ideological leader. And how am I going to break you from that? Very simply. How could you, in front of these people, you're making the anti-Semitism part of your whole ideology and whole philosophy is anti-Semitism. He says, I'm not going to let you do that. You take Mordechai the Jew, and you're in the contract. Show him respect, show him cover, cover him office, because he saved my life. The other Jews who want to kill, fine, kill him. But it can only be done for one purpose. Only for me. Not for you. You're not going to gain anything out of the destruction of the Jews. You're not going to gain a position through their destruction. That's what Ahasuerus said.
No.
Because he said, Yeshno am echad, mefur the mefar. This is a bad nation. They don't say malachim also. They don't. So fine, we'll destroy them. See? Really, came into the picture. She placed the final. She brought out the final point of Achashverosh, what Achashverosh had already started. See, he risen. That's why Haman said that. That's why they said that he was. That's why Zeresh Ishto imizera Yudim Hashachilosa limtolafano. That was the nefil. Wasn't just a personal thing that he didn't like. That's at a lower level. Haman was on a higher level. Ishvish, but the downfall was that his whole position as an ideological leader was broken. That's a shachilosa limpo the father. That was the doubt. Okay. Now what did Esther do? Esther added the final point. The last bit of evidence that was necessary to completely incriminate Haman. And where was that? What was that statement that she said? The statement was where she said that if we were sold as avodim and shvachos, as slaves, as the servants and maidservants, then I would have kept quiet. Because it wouldn't be worthy to serve the king. But what did she mean by that? What did she imply by that? She said she brought the final proof that there was no purpose in what he did to defend the king, but it was an ideology. Because why should he destroy them? Why doesn't he make them avodim u'shvachos? That would be the wrath, like Paro did. That's the regular, normal kind of hatred. That's the hatred of the Russia. So that's what she said. He is not really doing this for you. If he was doing this for you in line with your kind of hatred, then it'll be about a mishvachos. You could use the people and gain from them. Gain, make you more wealthy. A labor, tremendous labor force, for nothing, free. But it's lahashmi lara galabe. It means that this is what he is doing is just to try to set himself up as the ideological leader. And therefore, what he wants to do is really subserviate your position eventually, because you're just the economic head, you're just the political leader, and he will be the philosophical leader of the whole country, and he will have the control over the people, entire control. Lashmid Lara Gulabed is an ideology, that's what he's trying to do. That's when Ahasuerus decided that his fate was sealed, except it was sealed with the last thing that sealed it was the mistake that he made was when he fell on the bed. Because that association was, you see, he doesn't have any sense of this being his Malka, and on the contrary, he feels that he can approach her in such a way which breaks down the barrier between him and between her, and that's a gam lichbosh and Malka in the baboyas. When he saw that, that was the final struggle. That was the final psychological. Correct. Yes, correct. That's good. That's very good. That's right. Agam lichbosh shemalti meboyes means that he saw at that moment not just Haman as the ideological leader, but in being totally successful and eventually overthrowing him from his political position and economic position as well. That's correct. That's what he saw. He saw the phantom of that of his ultimate success, and that was what saw him as right. Very good. That's true. Okay.
From the beginning of his game, you say.
But by the plane of the hatred. On what plane is the hatred? That's more important. Quantity of hatred, yes. He could Ahasuerus hated the Jews more than Haman. On an emotional level, he hated him more. But it's a different plane. What is important is not how much hatred, but how the hatred is expressed, on what level. Is it an intellectual level? Ahasuerus wasn't an intellectual, never reached intellectual proportions. That's because he was basically a hedonist, whereas Haman was really an egotist.
What
can
we
do? Okay.
Yes. And she says, "Who it is?" He knew who it was.
Right.
Step over there. He couldn't do that. Like a turning point. But
yeah.
He knew really who it was. I mean, why'd he go through that step? The question and answer.
Right.
She became sort of like a super ego thing. Define who it was. He needed that last.
Yeah.
Definite, like he couldn't define somebody. He knew who it was. Yeah. He could say that. He could figure it out. He knew who the guy was.
She was keeping quiet for a reason. She wanted to first get his hatred up. Then he would reveal it. It wasn't saying he was coming.
Asher also Haman. Well, how did Chavona move in? He said, "Gam in the Eitzer also Haman the Mordechai, Asher Diber Tov al Hamelach." Oh, maybe they Haman. That's what he said. Yes, you see clearly that Haman's not interested in the benefit of the king at all, because he just made this eitz for Mordechai that Diber Tov al Hamelach, who supported the king. The Reuel Melech flew all off. That was the. It's simple, because the Russia is always tied to the physical, and even though he's ideological, but the thing that affects him most is the personal and the physical, and the personal, the hatred against the character of Mordechai was even greater than the hatred against the ideology at that moment, because the Russia is always affected by the physical characteristics. He's ideological too, but down deep he really believes in the physical. Because that's why he has to set up. That's why his ideas are not ideas that a person enjoys in reality. The Chacham uncovers an idea. These ideas are totally tied to the instinctual. The instinctual is the modus operandi of a Moloch. The instinctual. But it's essentially instinctual. But it uses in order in the service of the instincts. It uses the higher elements of man. It uses the higher elements of man in the service of the instincts. But what gets him crazy is the instinctual. An instinctual plane, that's what gets him crazy. That's why when he saw Mordechai, Volokom, Volozor, unaffected, that got him completely crazy. Because that was hitting the instinctual source.
It was also he's coming right out of the party.
Yes.
It was also immediately right after the party.
Yes.
He was totally uplifted.
Right.
And that was a real
sign. Right. He didn't have an ideological hatred with you. He realized, on the contrary, that he was in big danger with these other kind of things. And he realized that the Jew was really supporting him, was really saving, really helped him. And not only that, but Mordechai, of course, once he became in the Beis Hamelach, in the Beis Hamelach, he brought in great wealth. He was a great financier, brought in great wealth to Achashverosh. By Yosef Melech Achashverosh, Mas, he was able to levy taxes. There was prosperity. It was just like Don Isaac Abarbanel and Ferdinand years later in Spain. Same kind of thing. Who made Spain? The Jews made Spain. If they expelled the Jews, the whole country collapsed economically. So Mordechai, they secured Achashverosh by the wealth, by the fact that he's safe, and he realized these things. So his emotion wasn't on an ideological plane, so he can convert. He's basically a big Baltaiva, so he was happy.
Whoever
he
goes.
Yeah, he was happy to get rid of the fears and the nightmares and be very safe. He was better off, so he overcame his hatred. See, a Russian like that can overcome it. Yes, same thing as Paras Yosef. Same thing as Paras Yosef. Big Baltaiva, so he was happy. He was happy to get rid of the fears and the nightmares and be very sad. It goes better off. So we overcame his hatred. See, a Russian like that can overcome it. Yes, same thing as Paras Yosef. Same thing as Paras Yosef. Paras Yosef, same thing?
Really?
Okay.
No,
it was to show. The hedonist wanted to show.
No restriction. But not about ideological reasons.
Yeah, he wants to show that ideology is false. Because it's against the hedonist.
I think it's a point.
Let me show one more thing. Yes, sir. The difference is a Solanator. Okay. The difference, when you see Achashverosh also was a Balgaiva. You ask me, say, Achashverosh wasn't a Balgaiva? Of course he was a Balgaiva. You see the fact that what? That he wanted Vashti and Malka to show Laharos as Yachshah, and Laharos to show the whole thing was to show how great he was, the whole party. But the answer is, you see, the hedonist ego is simply tied to his hedonistic pleasures. It's not, he's showing how great he is, he has this, he has that. In Homon, it's not an ego tied to an external object. It's an ego attached to himself, to the self. That's the difference. That's the difference. Okay. This is an Ervin and Dalla, the Gemara says, on the, based on the Pasuk in Kehelas. That Pasuk Kehelas says that Ayelas Ahovin V'Yalas Fein. So the Pasuk in that Kehelas is our Mishnah. In Mishnah Hey, says that the. So the Gemara says a yellow, the Pasuk says a yellow, so hold on the yellow stain. Da deho yiravucha for chol eis. The ba'avosa tish gesan. They should constantly be involved in its love, which means we're referring to Talmud Torah, referring to Torah. But the marshal that it gives is like a female ram, that it's, that da deho yiravucha for chol eis. That its breath should nurture you at all times. So the Gemara says in Erevin that why is Torah like a breast? So the Gemara says, because Loma Nimshlut Divrei Torah Kedod, Ma Dod Ze Kol Zman Shatinov Memashmesh Bo Motze Bo Cholov, Av Divrei Torah Kol Zman Shatam Hoge Bo Motze Ventam. So just like the breast, when the child suckles the mother's breast, so the more it presses, the more it gives out milk, so to Divrei Torah, the more one works the Torah, works the Torah, so the more ideas come. So, you see, in Talmud Torah is something which is really an unpredictable kind of thing. You can't, you never get finished with it. So, I want to add a couple of points to what we said last week, because I was thinking about it, and a couple of more points became clear to me. The two points are psychological points, the last is a philosophical. The first point I want to mention is that it's interesting that Medrash that we were dealing with, the Medrash that says that Lasos Kirtzon Ish Va'ish, when he made this tremendous party, so it says that his purpose was to act in accordance with the will of Ish Va'ish, each man. So Chazal say, what is each man? So they say there were two men that were there that were important. One was Haman and one was Mordechai. And we explain the reason is because they were both cerebral individuals. That Haman represented a highly developed, sophisticated personality, and in opposition to him, Mordechai was also a sophisticated personality. The difference, of course, was that Haman's sophistication was a sophistication of his mind, but his mind was in the service of his instincts. His mind was in the service of his instincts. And we explained that that's really what a Moloch is. A Moloch is an intellectual personality, but his intellect is in the service of his instinctual emotions, and the main emotion that's behind it is the egotistic. That's a Moloch. That's Nazi Germany, that's Hitler, Yamach Shalom. And in opposition to this, there is the mind in the service of the soul, in the service of the pursuit of knowledge. That's the Jew. That's Mordechai. So that's what the Medrash is doing. It's placing these two personalities in juxtaposition to each other. Both sophisticated people. Both are removed from the baser instincts. Okay, but there's something else in the Medrash that occurred to me after I was thinking about it. Now, what does it mean? This pasuk is saying really. What does the pasuk say? Pasuk says that his whole method in making this big party, this extravagance, was Lasos Kirtzon Ish V'Ish. So it said the two people. One person was Mordechai and one person was Haman, which means Ahasuerus was impressed with both of them. He was impressed with both of them. He realized that these are not ordinary people. Both of them are not ordinary people. He wasn't into which one's a Russian, which one's a Tzaddik, but he noticed that there's some unusual quality that these two people have. And they're important people insofar as his regime, as far as his malchus, his kingdom is concerned. Now, but the Pasuk has to make sense. When Chazal and the Medrash, we have a Medrash, the Medrash has to make sense on all planes. And we have to understand Pshuto Shel Mikra. So, but Lasos Kitzon Ishvish doesn't seem to mean Mordechai and Amon. Lasos Kitzon Ishvish seems to mean that he made the party in a way that everybody's happy, wanted to satisfy everybody. That's the blame shadow Pasuk. Mm-hmm. So how could Chazal take this Pasuk out of its context and say Ishvish means Amon and Mordechai? There were hundreds and hundreds of people at the party. It was a party, an extended party, extended extravagance for months. So Yomim Rabbi Shmonim Mas Yom? Half a year? So what is the, how can you say these two people? An interesting psychological phenomenon, Chazal was saying. Yes?
That psychological thing is
Mordechai, Holech, Legol, that's right. Because they both represent a sophistication. Correct, but it's, they're in juxtaposition. One is evil, and one represents the height of man. Okay, but the question still is, how do you interpret the plain shot in the pasuk? An interesting observation. Chazal has to make sense in terms of the plain shot in Shomikra. So how do you understand? Yes? We looked at them as great people. We saw their unusual qualities. These are unusual. They stood out. Haman and Mordechai stood out in Achashverosh's mind. So these are unusual people. These are people that I have to, are important people. That I have to deal with. These are the main people. And what does it show you? It shows you an interesting thing. It's a psychological thing. It shows you that a person can make a party for hundreds of people, and in the back of his mind, he really wants to impress one person or two people. That's what it shows. Interesting psychological observation. It means it's true. It means to say that people don't really look into their motivations deeply. But the truth of the matter is, that's the way it is. That the whole party that he made, all these hundreds of people, in the back of his mind, who was he concerned about that they should be impressed? It was these two individuals. Haman and Mordechai. Psychological phenomenon. Okay. I thought I'd mention it. Now, because I don't like to leave the Chazal without a complete interpretation. All right. There's one more thing I want to... Another thing I want to explain on another psychological point is the question that Rabbi Mann raised. The question Rabbi Mann raised was, all right, we know how Esther plotted to bring Ahasuerus to that situation where he condemned Haman. And Rabbi Mann asked me last week, what does it mean when Esther said there's somebody that wants to destroy me and my nation? So there was someone to destroy me and my nation. So what was Achashverosh's response? Mihu zeh v'yezehu shemalo liba lasaskan. Okay. So Rabbi Mann said, what is the significance of this outburst on the part of Achashverosh? Mihu zeh v'yezehu. So actually, let's think about it. When you look into it, it is really a crazy statement. What do you mean, mihu zeh v'yezehu shemalo liba lasaskan? Achashverosh himself was the one. And he offered money. Haman offered money. What did Ahasuerus say? Hakesef nasulach. Rom lasas bo katov veinecha. So he was really the one that was the most evil in terms of the situation, in terms of the effectiveness of the situation of bringing about the chalul of the destruction of the Jews. Ahasuerus was the one. He said, "V'yezehu Hashem lo liba lasas kein." He wasn't stupid. He knew. He just was the one that was instrumental, and his hatred for the Jews was greater, as was mentioned last week. Was greater on an emotional plane. His hatred was greater than Haman's. Okay. So what's the answer? It was an absurd remark. What's the answer? Yes.
I just want to say, politicians
really cheat. From what we see from the Megillah, of course, you have to understand, like the Ramban says, and it's obvious from the Chumash, that the Torah and the Ksuvim, the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, do not really tell you the entire, exactly every bit of the conversation. They just tell you the main point. And the main idea that went on, the main conversation, they don't tell you every single word in the conversation. It could have been, there's probably much more there. Sure, for sure, there was much more there than the Pasuk described. But really, Esther HaMalka used three psychological mechanisms in bringing about the change in Ahasuerus. They were all through an essay. First mechanism she used was, as I mentioned last week, was fantasy. The first time she didn't say what she wanted. She made the first party, and then she allowed him to think overnight. His imagination was instrumental in changing and bringing it back. The fears, he couldn't sleep, the fears that he had. So that was the first mechanism that she used. She knew that the imagination, the fantasy, is more powerful than any reality. And she allowed him to fantasize, and that's how she really primed him for the situation. That's one mechanism she used. The second mechanism she used was an important principle. That principle is that indirect suggestion is far, far more effective than direct suggestion. It's an important principle. First wants to use this principle to avail himself of it in other areas. General. Why is that so? Because the fact is that whenever you offer a direct suggestion, there's always a resistance factor on the part of the person that's taking the suggestion. Because a person by nature doesn't like to take a suggestion from somebody else. It's automatically a put down. You're listening to me. So that's why it's far more effective to place a suggestion indirectly so that the person himself picks up on it, because then they think it's their own idea. And that's why it's much more effective. Mm-hmm. That was the second method that she used. When did she use that method? When she said, what kind of a statement? Why say such a thing? She said, because it was, if we only sold for slaves and maidservants, I would have kept quiet, because that's not worthwhile enough to disturb the king. Okay? So what did she mean? Over there she wanted to demonstrate that Haman is not really interested in the benefit of Ahasuerus. Of course, if that was the case, so from an economic standpoint, it would have been better to enslave the Jews. But he was really he was involved in an ideology, which was his own agenda. And he wanted to become an ideological leader, which would take away power eventually from Ahasuerus. But she didn't say it openly, because an open suggestion doesn't carry as much efficacy. So therefore, what did she do? She sort of, in her statement, she included it, to allow him to realize that this man, let him pick it up on his own. Let him think of it as his own idea. Then it'll be more effective. That's the second psychological principle that she used. The third one, perhaps the most important one, was that she was able to make her request in a way that Ahasuerus would never think that she thinks that he is in any way responsible. Because if he thought for a moment that she actually thought that she considered him to be involved, that would have been the end of it. Then it would have been a total condemnation. So she had to present it in a way that he felt secure that she in no way thinks that he really is responsible. And that was his reaction. He acted completely ignorant. Who is it? Who is it that came up with this idea? I had nothing to do with it. So the third, that was probably the most important psychological principle that she used. That if you're trying to influence a person to do something, you must make sure that you remove from that person any kind of guilt attached to it, any kind of condemnation. Because if there's condemnation, then you lost the person. A person that's not perfected, the slightest condemnation, he's gone, because he can't tolerate it. So she presented it skillfully in a way that he never imagined that she thought that she's condemning him. That was the perfect reaction. Who could it be that did this thing? I had nothing to do with it. Was Haman Haraza? That's it. Yes. You have to look into the Megillah. See, the three principles that you use in order to bring about the return. It says that it's a matter of dictum. It says, so he went out to the garden. He had to cool off. V'homon omad levakesh al nafsho me esther amarko. He says, v'homon omad, in the past tense. V'homon omad, he got up to beg for his life from esther amarko. Because he saw ki cholzai lo haromes amarko, it was complete. And the only chance he had was to appeal to the sympathies of esther. Okay? Next pasuk it says, "Va'melach shav meginas abisno beis mishdayayin," and the king returned. It says, "Va'homan no fail al amito asher Esther olal." What does it say? Always bothers me. I'm a bar kiris. I learned in the gilas. I always know. I have to remember. Amad is the first one is in the past, but the second one he attempted to say, "Va'homan no fail al amito asher Esther olal." Why did it switch it from the past of Amad? Because it's telling you historically what happened. So it should be in the past. But then "Va'homan" doesn't say "no fail al amito." "Va'homan no fail." Why is it no fail in the present? Why did it switch to the present form of the verb? What's the answer? And the answer is something. So we mentioned last week that the deadly error he committed was that he went on her bed. That showed that he has no respect for the queen. There's supposed to be a distance between the queen and between a stranger. After all, the queen belongs to the king. And he lost a sense of propriety and he fell on the bed. But what it means is, you see, he wasn't completely foolish. He wasn't completely foolish, Haman. It's describing an event that he didn't completely lose his senses. Why? Because he did it when the king went out. You see? He would never have done it if the king would not have gone out. So you see here the intricacies, the exactness of the Ashgacha. The Ashgacha was that the king should walk out. He went out to the garden. Then, what does it mean? He was in the process because the king went out. That's why he took the liberty, because he wasn't there. He never would have done it in the presence of the king. You see? But when the king came back, what did he saw? What did he see? He saw that Haman is in. He was in the process because he had done it before when the king left. He didn't imagine the king would return so quickly. You see, if the king would stay there the entire time, he never would have done it. So Haman, if it would have said Haman no foul, it would imply that the king came back and Haman fell on the bed. He wouldn't have done it. And what sealed his fate was Agam Lichbo Shesam Malka Uni Babayas. So part of the Ashkocha was that Ahasuerus should walk out into the garden because of his anger. If he didn't walk out, his fate would not have been sealed. It's an interesting point that you could derive just from the form of the verb. The first one is in the past, Amad. The second one is no fail in the present. Yes?
At the point at which Esther and...
The further the emotion is driven home, that is that's the security of the that gives the old security of his decision process.
Okay.
So Agam Lichbosh and Malkin and Baboyev, that was
it.
That was it. That sealed. That sealed his fate. And it was only because Ahasuerus walked out. An interesting thing. Megillah points out every nuance of the Ashkah.
Ahasuerus
was not an abstract. Was not an objective, cool thinker. He wasn't. He wasn't stupid. I mean, he was Melech. Couldn't have been stupid. But the emotions played a powerful role in his life, and that's why she had a work with his emotions. Yes. Agam lichbosh the malka was because before he started with the crown, and then he withdrew. And it's Agam lichbosh the malka. Yes, is that he made the connection between the two. That's excellent. Very good. Made the connection between his originally he wanted to give the crown, and then he saw he backed off. He saw Ahasuerus' face. So he wasn't too happy about that. So he backed off. Like Rashi says, "Oh, we won't use the crown." You know. But Hagam Lichbosh Samal Kimi Vapoyas brought back his original intention.
Very good. Yeah.
There's a kind of bargain. That it means like Donnie said, Lada Marche Levu Mele Kim Mane Lashon. It means that this was Ashgacha. Hagam Yetzim Kriya Melech Afnei Haman Chafu. His fate was sealed by that moment that Ahasuerus left him. Okay. Yeah. Tereshu Chsav is not a vehicle, simply a vehicle of communication. Torah Shebichsav is really a phenomenon. Torah Shebichsav is a phenomenon. You have to study Torah Shebichsav just like a scientist would study the phenomena of the universe. It's phenomenal. Okay. There's one more thing I want to bring up. And that is, we mentioned last week, we said that there were two hatreds that Haman had towards Mordechai. One was an ideological hate. That was the first hatred. That's when he heard that Mordechai didn't bow down to him. Why? Because he's a Jew, and he was claiming that this is not merely showing respect to a person, but this was really embracing an ideology. And then he lost, I'm Mordechai. So there was an ideological hate towards the Jew. But then later, after that, subsequently, what happened was that he saw that Mordechai lo kom velo zor. He didn't get up, and he wasn't moved by him at all. There was a personal hatred towards the character of the Jew. The two hatreds that the Jew experiences. That's why you see, it has nothing to do with anti-Semitism and Nazism, had nothing to do with the ideology. Not nothing to do, only in an indirect sense. I mean, it had to do, I explained last week. But I mean to say, a person who gave up the ideology of Judaism was not saved. Why? Because the character of the Jew became the object of the hate of the Nazis. And even though a person was not religious, had nothing to do with Judaism, but the character of the Jew can't be obliterated. Cannot be obliterated, and the hatred will express itself towards the character and personality of the Jew. That was why Yemolei Haman al Mordechai. What? What aspect of the character of the Jew is v'lo kom v'lo zah? That the Jew is not impressed. The Jew is never impressed by the goyim, no matter how much he suffers because of the hatred, but there's something in him that gives him the strength and the ability to simply laugh off the guy. Underneath it all, he's laughing at the guy. And the guy knows. As a matter of fact, I remember an article many years ago in Time magazine where they translated the Jewish song of Shikr is a God. Shikr is a God. Shikr is a Trinkim is a Vala is a God. Which means that the translator of the song says a guy is a drunkard, and they translated it correctly. It came out sounding a little funny in English. Drunk he is, drink he must, because he is a Gentile. So the what? It's a matter of anti-Semitism. But of course, some generous guy said, "Look, what do you expect? You take a people and you try to destroy them, and mistreat them, and torture them throughout the centuries. So they make up a little song. So that's why that gives you right. Of course, the whole thing is crazy, but." The fact is, why is it so important to the guy, really? Why is the guy... Because the guy knows that that's true. He knows that no matter what he does, the Jew just simply doesn't... V'lo kom v'lo zah. He doesn't notice it. That's why, as I mentioned before, Professor Wolfson of the university speaks about how the guy would herd the Jews into the churches and have the ministers preach there all day for hours and hours. Jew will walk out. Who is impressed by the guy? To my mind, what causes the greatest impression? Okay. Yeah. You see. Like a Jew, before you go to bathroom, says, "Excuse me, I have to go see the park." Common expression. I won't get in trouble with that. I got used to the habit doing it. My uncle always said that. So I got used to the habit doing that. Then I was in the university. I was talking with Guyan and in the middle, I excused myself. Pasuk actually describes it exactly. And that's the character of the Jew. Below kom, below zah. He's unimpressed. Even the Jew that's gone away from the others from Yiddishkeit still has that character. Still has that character. Yeah. The head of the B'nai Noach movement, he said that he was always taught, and he became a minister after all, and he said that that started him to think into Yadis. That caused him to begin to think about. Yeah. Yes. The Rabbi may amei haoretz mitziyadim. Why? Ki nofal pachar hayehudim alei. Because the fear of the Jew fell upon him. What is the fear of the Jew? The fear of the Jew that I mentioned last week, I said behind anti-Semitism is a tremendous fear. And as a matter of fact, the Yadus maintains that the lowly position of the Jew throughout the centuries, throughout the past millennia, is because of the fact that it's really the negative of the true position of the Jew. Because the true position of the Jew is as an individual or as a group that inspires fear. And what happened was, the moment the Jews rose, it was a return to their rightful position. And that's the position of the Jew, Rimos HaMashiach. The reason why the Jew is so downtrodden is not simply that he's downtrodden. It's because he's deserving of their true position, and the world recognizes it. That's why they have to push him down. It's the opposite side of the cause can be expressed in two ways. It can be expressed in his rightful way. That's when the Jew lives according to the Torah. If he doesn't live according to the Torah, it's going to be expressed in the negative. The low position of the Jew throughout the centuries is the negative of his true position. Okay? It's like Sigmund Freud said, that the Jew, 3,000 years ago, the Jew said he's a chosen people, and the world acted as if they believed in him ever since. Which means to say, you should have gone a little deeper. I was just talking from the superficial psychological aspect. From a Torah point of view, it means to say that they know what the true position of the Jew is, and they fear the Jew, and that's what causes the downtroddenness of the Jew. It's the negative of the reality. The negative of the reality.
That's the Zara Yehudim.
The Mizara Yehudim. That's right. Nothal people are harmed. And that's what the brother says. But take a look further. In the test, what does it say? It says, Ki godol Mordechai beveis hamelach, v'shomo holech b'chol ha'medinos. He was great in the house of the king, and his fame went throughout all the medinos, throughout all the countries. Ki yo'ish Mordechai holech v'godol. Wasn't it Ki yo'ish Mordechai holech v'godol? The man Mordechai was growing ever greater, becoming ever greater. What does it mean? It means to say, it's different than Pachar Yehudim Alayim. What's the difference? Godol Mordechai is the character of the Jew, the personality of the Jew. Just like the two hatreds that Haman had against Mordechai. One was the ideological hate. That was Am Mordechai, Kigidlo Am Mordechai. That was Kinafal Pachar Yehudim Alayim. That was restored to their rightful position. So then it was Kinafal Pachar Yehudim Alayim. And in the same manner, just like below Kom below Zomi Menu, there was hatred against the personality of Mordechai. On the contrary, when his true position was restored, it was Ki Godol Mordechai Beveis HaMelech, Ki Yo'ish Mordechai Holech VeGodol, because the personality of Mordechai, the character of the Jew, was raised to the highest esteem. Both things are met. When you look into it later, you see that both things are mentioned. Zev Meir pointed to this out to me, that it's carried through. Both things are carried through exactly the way originally was in the negative, and was restored to the negative. Carries it out precisely. Where does this come from, really? I mean, it's the assault against the personality, and then on the contrary, the esteem of the Jew because of his ideology, and the esteem of the Jew because of his personality, because of his character. His character. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it says over there, it says Kiyisha by Moshe also. But it's a pasuk in the Torah. It says Moshe, Godol Moshe,
Gamish
Moshe, Godol Moshe,
Ve'eni Ad Eparo,
that's right. Yeah, that's the personality of Moshe, the character of Moshe. That's what they saw. Correct. But it's a pasuk in the Torah. It's a pasuk in Dvarim. Pasuk in Dvarim and Kisav. The pasuk says, in the Brachos, in the Brachos of Kisavah, the pasuk says, and there's a chazal, a strange chazal that I never understood until now. It says like this. It says, the pasuk, it's in Shishi. It's in Dvarim Chavches Yud. V'ro kol amei ha'oretz kishem ad Hashem nikra olecho v'yoru mina. It says that the nations of the world will see that the name of God is called upon you, and they will fear you. They will fear you. But what does Chazal say? Yeah, Amar Gadol. Now, what does it mean? Kishem Hashem Nikra Lecho Elu Tefillin Shebarosh. It's referring to the tefillin that a person wears on his head. What does I never understood? What does Chazal mean that it refers to the tefillin shevarosh? What does it mean that a person will say, God will see a Jew with a tefillin on his head and they're going to become frightened? What does it mean? What does it mean? It means to say like this. The Pasuk says, is referring to the people. It's referring, because the Pasuk is referring to the people. It's referring to the people. Which means the character of the people will be known, that and they'll fear them. Plain shot in the Pasuk. They'll be afraid of them. You know, it says, the Pasuk says, that the Pasuk says, we're afraid of you as a nation. Okay? So that's one. But Chazal say, it means there's a deeper level. It means the ideological recognition. That's Tzvon Shabarosh. What's Tzvon Shabarosh? Tzvon Shabarosh means the ideas of the parshias of the parshias of Tzvon, of Shema, of Achdus HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the fact that we were given the true ideas concerning God, and that these ideas we put on the Rosh, like put on the Rosh, to show them that they're a part of our intellectual makeup, of the Chachma of the Jew, and because of that, the Goyim will be inspired with fear. The fear will be generated from the ideology of the Jew. So it's really on two planes. That's what Chazal means. Eilut Tzvon Shabarosh means that the Yoru Mimekah will be because of two things. The flame shot in the Pasuk is because of the character of the Yoru. That's the flame shot. But behind it is the Tzvon Shabarosh. That's what Rabbi Elazar Gaon says. Eilut Tzvon Shabarosh. Yes.
Hitler in Mein Kampf says that the reason he hates the Jews is because they gave us the Ten Commandments, which means a form of conscience. He says he would rather be a Tooth and Pagan and not have any restraints, and that's why he hates the Jews.
Yeah, that's correct. Because of the ethics and the morality. And he was basically filled with a tremendous fear of the Jew. As you see, it's a universal conspiracy, and the unbelievable power that he projected onto the Jew. It's amazing. It shows you the tremendous fear that he had of him. But that's the Pasuk. So it's a Pasuk in the Torah. That's the Pasuk. Eilut Tzvon Shabarosh. Yes. So Rashi says that it's better.
They said devil pardosa shall yitzlak will a kaspo who's a havo shall
be malach. Personality. Personality,
but versus the other ego, he was the other ego ideal, Zavi Mela, so Catherine Duff, right. Was even greater.
But behind the personality is the ideas. Okay. All right, that's it. Okay. Achman Krash Alchlier. All right, the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, you got to go through the Cheshbon here. So now, after you've gone through the Cheshbon, so it works like this. There are basically two possibilities before the Mishnah. One possibility is that Kriyas and Megillah is a situational phenomenon. Situational phenomenon. That wherever you are, that's how you lean. In other words, the halacha was that there's leaning, that Kriyas and Megillah it takes place in a krach on the 15th, and in an ear on the 14th. That's the chiyuv hamitzvah, that's the way it works. And it depends where you are. If you're in the ear, so then at that time, so you read like the ear. If you're in the krach, you read like the krach. In other words, the chiyuv is fulfilled according to the way the hechitimtza works out, according to the situation. There's a chiyuv on the ear to read in the 15th. If you happen to be in the ear in the 15th, you're chayav on the 15th. So the kiyum mitzvah is contingent upon the kiyum, the ofen kiyuma. All right, there's two ways to make a mitzvah, either in the krach or in the ear. So it depends, situationally, it depends where you are. Okay? If that were the case, so then if you found yourself in the ear, when? Krach on the 14th and the ear in the 15th, you'd be Patlagamri. The second possibility is it goes by your citizenship. If you're a citizen of the Krach, so then you're chayiv on the 15th. If you're a citizen of the ear, you're chayiv on the 14th. Okay? No matter where you are. What would be the case, like, no matter where you are?
So therefore, if you are a citizen of the Krachan and the 14th, you are in an ear. So then what would it mean? So you mean you read on the 15th? So that, I would say, I'll be sure it's possible to say such a thing, but the Gemara rejects it from the Pasuk, I can't eat him a present, my Yoshim are present. So what does it say there? Michtik, so you eat him a present. One will eat him a Michtik, my Yoshim are present. Hakamashmon, the Pris Ben Yom, Nikra Pris. So he's a Pris for a day. So what's the question? Let's put it in halachic terms. What's the question in halachic terms? The question is, what is the function of ear and krach? That's the question. Is ear and krach, are ear and krach mechayvim in the mitzvah? Or are ear and krach halachin in kiyumei mitzvah? In kiyumei mitzvah. That's the question in abstract. Okay? If you say that ear and krach halachin halachas in the mechayiv of the mitzvah, so then I say like this. If you find yourself in an ear and you dalid, so since you're in an ear, so the mechayiv is chal upon you and you dalid. Krach, the mechayiv is chal on you and tesvav. So it's possible to avoid either mechayiv. It's simple. It's, I go to the krach in you dalid, and therefore there's no machayev on me in Yudalid, and the moment Yudalid is over, or it's about to be over, I can't read the Megillah anymore, so I jump out of the Choma, and I'm in the and I'm outside of the Krach, and now I'm putter because there's no machayev in the ear of Tesvav. So that would mean that ear and Krach are entities insofar as the Chiyuv HaMitzvah is concerned. That's what it would mean definitively if we would say that pshat, but of course that pshat is completely rejected. All right? That pshat, it seems, is completely rejected.
It makes sense, huh?
It makes sense, but it's completely rejected. Okay? But it's a possibility. It's a viable possibility, but apparently the Gemara doesn't deal with that possibility. That possibility is considered is not considered. Okay. Now what's the other possibility? The other possibility is to say that the Mechayev, that what is Ir and Krach? What's the role of Ir and Krach in the Mitzvah, Kriyas, and Megillah? It's not the role in terms of the machayev, in terms of chiyuv ha-mitzvah. But the role it plays is strictly in terms of kiyum ha-mitzvah, the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Which means to say like this, the chiyuv of the mitzvah is chal on the gavra wherever he is. When? I don't know when. But it's chal on the gavra wherever he is. Okay? But the only thing is like this, that a gavra that's a ben-ir, his kiyum ha-mitzvah takes place when? On yudalit. A gavra is a ben krach, his kiyum mitzvah takes place on tesvav. But the chiyuv mitzvah is not totally in being present, and is not totally in ear, it's not totally in krach. It doesn't matter. They're all, the chiyuv mitzvah is chal on klal Yisrael, every Jew, chiyuv mitzvah. The only thing is that the kiyum kriyasa takes place be yudalit in the ear, and then in the krach on tesvav. Okay? So then I would say, in simple terms, that it depends where I'm a citizen of. It's totally the gavra, basically. It's totally the gavra. Okay? Totally in the gavra, just a second. Totally the gavra. So in other words, it would be totally completely in the gavra, which means to say it depends what kind of a gavra I am. If I'm a gavra of a ben krach, that's where I live. So therefore, my chiyuv is to read it when? To read it on the 15th. If I'm a Ben-Ir, so then my chiyuv is reading the 14th. It doesn't matter where I am. There's no halacha that I have to go back. If I'm a Ben-Krach, for instance, and I went outside of the Krach, it doesn't, and I'm on the 15th, I'm in an ear, wouldn't make any difference. I still would read it where? I'd read in the ear. I read on the 15th. Because it's halacha in the Gavra. That the Gavra's, the chiyuv of the Gavra is what? The chiyuv of the Gavra is to read it whenever there's manis. It's not dependent on this. There's not a locha that the kriya, that if I'm a ben krach, that my only kriya that I could be yotze with is to read it in a krach. There wouldn't be any locha like that. The locha is a ben krach is chayev when? Is chayev is chayev in the 15th. And a ben year is chayev in the 14th. According to the first way, we said the word, no. According to the first way, the machayev is the ear and the krach. That's the machayev. The chiyuv ha-mitzvah. And according to the first way, there's one big difference. According to the first way, the chiyuv and the kiyum are commensurate. Because what's the machayev? The machayev is the ear. So where you are, that's where your kriya is. Right? It's where you are, that's your kriya is. So if you're in the krach on tesvav, so then you have a chiyuv of the krach, and you have a kiyum in the krach. But once you switch it to the Gavra, now you have a strange phenomenon, which means to say that what a person is a Ben Krach, he's a citizen of a Krach, and he's in the 14th, he's going to be in an ear, so he'll still be Chayev. Why would he be Chayev? Even though he's not in the Krach. So come on, you can have, there's no aloha that the Kiyum HaMitzvah of a Ben Krach has to be inside the Krach. That's not the aloha. The aloha is totally dependent upon the Gavra, which means to say that if I'm a Gavra of a Ben Krach, so then I'm Chayev in Kriya on the 15th. It has nothing to do with where I am. It has nothing to do with the Kiyum Kriyasa. It doesn't have to be inside the Krach. The Kiyum Kriyasa can be anywhere. But if I'm a Gavra of a Ben Krach, so I'm Chayev on the 15th. If I'm a Gavra of a Ben Ir, I'm Chayev on the 14th. Wouldn't make any difference whatsoever. So if I went to Yerushalayim and I live in Tel Aviv, so I go to Yerushalayim, so on the 14th I'd be Chayev in Kriyas and Megillah. Because I'm a Ben Ir. And the Machayev is based upon the type of Gavra I am. It's purely Allah and the type of Gavra I am. That would have been the Allah if it wasn't the Pasuk. What does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk says, no, okay, now you're my prozim. If it would have stopped there, that's what it would have meant. But it says, a Yoshim Barea Prozos. What's a Yoshim Barea Prozos? So the Gemara says, Pruz Ben Yomo Nikra Pruz, which means to say like this. He comes from Yerushalayim, and now he goes to Tel Aviv. He's on Tel Aviv on the 14th, right? So now it's just a question, what's the halacha of Pruz Ben Yomo, basically? Pruz Ben Yomo doesn't change the formula. The formula is the same. Which means to say the Machayev is not the ear and not the krach, but the Machayev is chal negavra. Ear and krach is aloch and kiyum mitzvah, not aloch and chiyum mitzvah. Okay? It's aloch and kiyum mitzvah, the fact of ear and krach. It's not aloch and chiyum mitzvah. So therefore, even though I'm in the Tel Aviv, so it doesn't matter. The ear is not a Machayev. The ear is not a Machayev. What's the Machayev? The Machayev is chal negavra. And ear is only aloch and kiyum mitzvah. So the only thing is that it says Ayosh bin Baria Prazos. What does it mean, Ayosh bin Baria Prazos? Ayosh bin Baria Prazos. So it means that Pruz Ben Yomo is Nikra Pruz. Which means to say, what does that mean to say? Pruz Ben Yomo, what kind of exercise is it? What does it mean? Pruz Ben Yomo Nikra Pruz. What does it mean? It means to say that the definition of where you're from is not based upon where you live all the time, but it's based upon where you live in the Zman of Chiyuv HaMitzvah. In other words, where you live is not determined by your real citizenship, where you live all year round, but it's determined where you live insofar as Purim is concerned. Okay? What? So therefore, so you understand that if I'm going to be in Tel Aviv for the whole day of the 14th, so at least till the morning when there's a Chiyuv, where there's a Chiyuv Kriyas HaMegillah, so now I'm considered a Yoshev in the Kenyan of Prozim, a Yoshev in the Prozis. So I'm considered a Yoshev in the Prozis. Why? Because insofar as Purim's concerned, Purim doesn't recognize the history of the Gavra. His history starts right then and there. Where he lives is determined where he is in this man of Allah. Allah is man. Allah is man, so he's over there. Okay. So therefore, he's a citizen of Tel Aviv. So that's it. So the Gavra is defined by circumstance. Now let's say conversely, you have a Ben Krach. So where did he go? A Ben Ir went to Yerushalayim on the 14th. And he what? Vodin the Ben Ir Shalcha Krach. So he went to Yerushalayim. In Masad Lachzor Balele Tesvav. So he's going to go back when? He's going to go back before Amar HaShachar, before Lele Tezvav. So what do you say about such a guy? So where's he dog? Shalei Yehesham B'yom Tezvav. Lo Havi Mukaf Liyama. Why? Why isn't he Mukaf Liyama? So it doesn't work out. No, it doesn't work out. Why? Because insofar as Purim is concerned, he's definitely not defined as a Ben Ir, because he's in the Krach. It's Yom. The same as those things in an air Ben Ir. A Ben Ir is a Ben Ir because it's defined where you are in Purim. So, one said Midbar is nothing. Midbar is like an ear. There's no Lachia being an ear. No. Everybody in the Krach has to land then on your dollar. Why is a guy putter in the Krach on your... No, but why is he putter in the Krach on your dollar? In other words, right now on your dollar when I'm in the Krach. So what am I halachically? Am I defined as a Ben Ir insofar as Purim is concerned? Of course not. Otherwise, I've been in the Krach, but I have to read. So I'm not defined as a Ben Ir if I'm in the Krach. The Krach exempts me from being defined as a Ben Ir. So just because I'm going to go back that night, and I'm going to miss the Kriya and the Krach, so what? So why am I a Ben Ir? It's like this, in other words. The question is, what is the Xeris HaKosev of Alakena Yudim HaPrazim HaYosh Ben Bari HaPrazos? So what does that Yosh Mar process mean? Prisben Yoma. Prisben Yoma. So what does it mean, Prisben Yoma? Does Prisben Yoma mean to say that we define the citizenship of the person based upon the day of Purim? We don't recognize where he lives. Outside of Purim, there's nothing. Nothing exists. We only recognize the citizenship in terms of Purim. That's the day that we're concerned about. We don't care where he lives the rest of the year. The rest of the year, nothing to do with Purim. Doesn't get it. So it's purely halachic citizenship. It's a citizenship insofar as Purim is concerned. If that's the case, we encounter this problem. Because if he's living in the krach, if he's sitting in the krach, living in, he's in the krach on the 14th, so therefore, what is he basically, in terms of Purim, he's a ben krach. He can't be mechayevim, because Purim, he doesn't have any citizenship in the other place, in the year. So how are you mechayev him on the 14th, just because he's going to return when? Before the 15th? Doesn't make any sense. He's not a citizen. The citizenship should be determined by where he lives in the time in this man of Purim. Right? That's the problem. That's if you learn the halacha Yosh Mar HaProzos the way we're defining it. But there's another way to learn halacha. It's not the halacha that Prisben Yomo is a universal halacha that defines the person's citizenship. No. Halacha like this. The citizenship of the person is defined by where he lives all year round. He's a Ben Yir because we know he was a Ben Yir yesterday and the day before yesterday. But there's a separate Gzeres HaKosov that says what? There's a separate Chaleshem of a Prisben Yomo. There's a different Chaleshem of a Prisben Yomo. What is a Prisben Yomo? A Prisben Yomo means a Gavra that's in a place Bishas Chi of Kriyoso. Bishas Chi of Kriyoso, if he's in the ear, so he's defined as a Ben Yir. As a Ben Yir. So it means to say like this, that there are two systems of defining a Ben Yir and a Ben Krach. There's a basic system a Gavra is defined as a Ben, as let's say the Krach. He's a Ben Krach. So he lives in Yerushalayim, he's basically defined as a Ben Krach. However, if he should find himself in an ear, Bisman Kriyoso, he has, because of that situation, he acquires a different Chaleshem. What's the different Chaleshem? A Prisben Yomo. Prisben Yomo. So Prisben Yomo is a new kind of a phenomenon. It's a separate phenomenon. Prisben Yomo is mevatel his status of a Ben Krach that he usually had before. The halacha is that where you're a Prisben Yomo, so then it's mafkia your status of a Ben Krach. And it's mechayev you what? As a Ben Yir. And conversely, if you're a Ben Yir that you went to Yerushalayim on the 14th, so basically you're defined as a Ben Yir. The only thing is, and you're chayev on the 14th. The only thing is, if you're going to stay there when? Bisman Kiyum Kriyoso. So then what happens? So you become a krach, what's it called? A mukif ben yomo. You become a mukif ben yomo. So a mukif ben yomo, you'll be chayiv what? You'll be mukif ben yomo, you'll be chayiv in Kriya on the 15th. On the 15th. Right, the only question is that on the 14th, where is he? He's in the krach. And on the 14th, he's not defined as a mukif ben yomo yet. So what potters him from Kriya Samagil on the 14th just because he knows he's going to be there on the 15th? But what are you going to say? Because he's not in his ear, because he has to be Yoshim Bar Yaprozos. So therefore he's not in his ear, so now he's what? So now he's not Chayiv like the people in the... he's not a Chayiv people yet. So then if he leaves on the 15th, he should be put to Wagamri? The answer is that, you see, Chiyuvei HaMitzvah are Chal only, of course, on a certain gavra, on a certain gavra. So in order to have chiyuvei on mitzvah, you have to have a chalas shem in the gavra. Am I right? Okay. Now, over here for Purim, there are two chalas shemos. There's a chalas shem ben ir, and there's a chalas shem ben krach. Okay. There's a chalas shem pruz ben yomo, and there's a chalas shem mukaf ben yomo. Two separate areas. As we explained before, if the person is in the 14th, he's in the krach, so he's still chayev. Why? Because he's defined as a prus. Right? He's defined as a prus, based upon the basic halacha of citizenship. Okay? If the person is from a krach, is in an ear, on the 14th, on the zman chiyuvo, is a new institution that comes in, it's called the prus ben yomo, which overrides, cancels out his citizenship, and defines him as what? As a prus ben yomo. So either you read on the 14th because you're defined as a prus, or else you read on the 14th because he's defined as a Prisben Yomo. Two separate definitions. Either you read on the 15th because he's defined as a Mukaf, or you read on the 15th because he's defined as what? As a Mukaf Ben Yomo. But the Chalas Shem Mukaf Ben Yomo overrides overrides the status of what? Of Ben-Ir. The status of Prus. So where you are, Bisman Chiyuvo, gives you your Chaleshem. There's two considerations. Where you are in general, and where you are B'Shas Ki Mitzvasa. And B'Shas Ki Mitzvasa is the overriding Chaleshem, so it makes you either a Ben-Ir or a Ben-Krach. Right? Okay. So now it comes out like this. That if a person knows he's going to be where? He's going to be in the Krach on the 15th. So now I'll ask you, in terms of the mitzvah, what is after the 15th is over? After the 15th is over, in terms of the mitzvah, what kind of a Chal Hashem does he have? Ben-Ir or Ben-Krach? What's the answer? Mokas Ben Yomo. So it comes out that his Chal Hashem is not going to emerge till when? Till the 15th. So here you have an unusual case. You have a case where the Chiyuv HaMitzvah is Chal before the Chal Hashem and the Gavra is Chal. You see? The Chiyuv HaMitzvah is Chal before the Chal Hashem and the Gavra is Chal. So it comes out that he can't be Chayav on the 14th because his Chal Hashem and the Gavra is not going to be Chal until tomorrow. And tomorrow, he's not going to have any Chiyuv on the 14th. So you can't have him. There is no Chiyuv on the 14th. Why is there no Chiyuv on the 14th? There's no Gavra! You can't have a Chiyuv HaMitzvah without a Gavra. In order to have Chiyuv HaMitzvah, you require a Gavra who's capable of receiving a mitzvah. But the Gavra has to either be defined as a Ben-Ir or a Ben-Krach. But his definition has not emerged yet. Because his definition is going to emerge when? He's going to emerge tomorrow. So what's going to happen is, after the 15th, when is his Chal Hashem going to emerge? You need 2 days for such a Chal Hashem to emerge. 1 day is not enough. Because take a look at it this way. When he reads on the 14th, let's say he reads on the 14th, okay, and he stays there on the 15th, okay, what happens? With Bracha Vatala? It's a Bracha Vatala. It comes out that insofar as Purim is concerned, what is he defined as? He's defined as a Mukaf Ben Yomo. He's defined, the Gemara says, Tvorehi. Need the Purus Ben Yomo, it be Purus. Mukaf Ben Yomo, it be Mukaf. Which means insofar as Purim is concerned, your ultimate definition is where you were Bisman Chiyuv Kriyasa. So if you are in the krach, bisman chiyuv kriyasa shel krach, so how are you defined as? You have defined as a mukaf. So if you're defined as a mukaf, that means your definition doesn't emerge until the 15th. So therefore, it's impossible in kiyum ha-mitzvah, it's absurd to go by what it would appear your definition is now, when you know very well that your definition tomorrow, which is going to be the ultimate definition, is going to be that of a mukaf. So therefore, the Gavra doesn't emerge until tomorrow. So it's impossible to have a Chiyuv HaMitzvah in practice to tell me that I should carry out my mitzvah when you know very well that what are you going to be defined as? You're going to be defined as a mukif, which means your kriya is levatala. Oh, kriya can be levatala, it's kriya. But the kisa kash. But the bracha is going to be levatala. The mitzvah is not a mitzvah because the definition is going to emerge tomorrow. It's an unusual awful case. But of course, rationality dictates that which way should you do it? You have to do it in a way where the Kiyum HaMitzvah makes sense in terms of the Gavra. And that's not going to take place until tomorrow. Because tomorrow, you're going to be defined permanently, insofar as Purim is concerned, as what? As a Gavra of a Mukaf. So the Gavra didn't emerge yet. The Gavra shall Chiyuv, to whom the Chiyuv relates, didn't emerge until tomorrow. So therefore, what happens? So you have to be current in the 15th. That's what it means if you know. If you know, it means if you know. If you know, they're going to stay there. So therefore, you know very well that what's going to happen, that you as a Gavra are going to emerge as a new Gavra tomorrow. So you have to wait.
But if you don't know,
you have to wait. It's a strange phenomenon. It's the only case in Ovan Halacha where the Gavra doesn't emerge until the next day, even though Chiyuv HaMitzvah emerges today. But you can't tell him to do Chiyuv HaMitzvah today. It's going to be absurd. Because tomorrow, his definition is going to be emerged. And what's going to happen tomorrow?
Right.
Tomorrow is going to come out that whatever he did yesterday was nonsense.
Right.
So what does he have to do? He has to do it like tomorrow. The only rational way to do it. The reason why, if it still bothers you, is, I'll tell you, it's a psychological problem. It's because you have a strong superego. And it bothers you that it would appear that you have to wait. But that's not good for a Baal Halacha. You have to be rational over here. And the fact is, his definition, we know, this is not going to emerge till tomorrow. So his whole idea today is an absurdity. In other words, there's no question about it that if he's a Ben Krach, Shaholach Le'ir, and he was a Purus Ben Yomo, then if he comes back to the Krach, well, that's not what we're saying about Rashi.
Right.
So you're saying he's Pater. Why? Because he was defined as what? as a prus ben yomo le mitzvah. So, and he only tolerates one definition. Now he's immune to all definitions because he's ready to kind of mitzvah. So your question is, where's a prus ben yomo and a krach ben yomo, a mukif ben yomo, which is chal? That's your question. That's your question, basically. If he's a prus ben yomo, so the answer is very simple. The answer is the first one, that's it, that's how it's logical. In other words, if the Gavra stayed on the 14th, the Das that he's going to stay on the 15th, and it was Ma'akif Kriyosa, and then on the 15th at night, before Amar HaShachar, he goes back to the 14th, to the year.
Does he read?
He can't read.
He can't read. Even though
he's not defined, because Kamel Lamafreya was defined as what? As a Benio, and he didn't read. So he wasn't going to the mitzvah. I don't know of any other case that I could think of where you have a similar kind of thing.
He's Mavata, I'm afraid. He's not Mavata while he's there on the 14th.
It's a rare case where the Chiyuv precedes the definition of the Gavra, so you can't execute the mitzvah until the definition of the Gavra is finalized. And the definition of Gavra is not going to be finalized until the next day. So it's only logical that you can't do it till the next day. That's the Gemara. That's it. So the Rosh disagrees in the name of Yerushalmi. And he maintains that if on the 14th, if you're on a very simple formula, if on the 14th you're in a krach, so what do? So you're laying like the krach. Period, that's it. Depends where you're on the 14th. Since in you're a ben ear, but you were in the krach when you were supposed to be chayiv, and you're supposed to be in your ear, but you moved into the krach, and in that time, in the krach, you're not chayiv anymore. So therefore, you're chayiv in the krach, and even if you go back to the ear, you're still going to read on the 15th. That's what he holds. Okay, because you're ben krach? Because it's called mukaf min yomah. He doesn't like this business of Rashi Lamafrei with the chayiv and the chalos shem and the gavra and all business. He doesn't like that. So what's the formula of the Yashami? Yashami says depends where he is in the 14th. If he's in the year in the 14th, if he's in the krach in the 14th, he immediately loses chavos a year because he can't lay now. So it's nostalgic chavos a year, and in place is chal what? Chavos a krach. So therefore he has to do what? 15th. No matter what, Rashi don't want to say that way because it's not chavos kriya in the krach. The Rosh himself says why Rashi don't want to say that. Because chavos kriya is not going to be chal till tomorrow. But the Rosh says it doesn't matter. Since it's nostalgic mimenu chavos kriya a year, because he's over here, so now he's going to be chayav on the 15th. All right, how's that work? What's the rush? The rush doesn't mention anything about hesped and tainus on the 14th. He just says very simple. He says, take a look. He gives a reason. He says, ukimoshim ol ben krach shalosh elias kben yir. That's his reason. Nistalik may all of Kovas Krias Anshe Makomo. The Nichwal and Bene Krach. That's his reason. That's as far. That's what you have to underline that part. Kivan Shabizman Chiyuv Krias Bene Makomo Eino Imohem. He's not with his people in the time when they're all reading the Megillah. That's what he says. You see, listen carefully. I just gave you the punchline of the rush. But he has the something before that, where he says like this. He says, Kemosha Moa leben krach lios keben ir. Kisha omad shom leila bosa mikta sayom shuzman kriyas yo bene yo vachol lo chos kriyas yom. Kemo kain moa leben ir shalach lo krach. Vamad shom ad mikta sayom yidala. Kivon shib is man chi friyasa. You know what I mean? He's saying there's an analogy here. There's an analogy here. On the surface, you don't understand the analogy. No, it's not the same. Because where is a ben krach and he went to the ear? I understand. Because it's chovas kriyasa. But over here, ben ear went to the krach. Nothing's happening in the krach now, insofar as Purim's concerned. So what's the kamo kain? It's an exact equation, exact analogy. It's because the rush state says something here which doesn't make any sense. And he says, kamo. Kimo shemo le ben krach lios kebenir kashama shom le la boso mitzvah sayom shizman kriyasa. Okay, and I'm skipping a few words. Kimo kein mo le benir. What do you mean kimo kein mo le benir shol krach? Vama shama mitzvah. Kivan shabizman chiyuv kriyas me mekama any moem nistalik melav chavas kriyas anshe mekama. What are you going to do with it? Yeah, exactly. What's the rush saying? What the rush is saying is like this. The rush is saying, how are you learning? You're learning like this. Now, what is prus ben yomo? Prus ben yomo means I'm there bisman chiyuv kriyasa. So it means where I am bisman chiyuv kriyasa is koveya, the definition of the gavra, right? The makom. Prus poros makom. If you're in a makom poros, it's koveya your definition as a poros, and that's gonna determine your chiyuv. So the Rush says one thing. Just like the halacha is insofar as, just like the makom is a determinant insofar as chiyuv kriyasa, the makom is a determinant, should be a determinant insofar as ptur kriyasa. insofar as pure kriyasa is concerned. So therefore, if you're going to tell me that being in a city that's a poros on Yom Yudalid renders me a poros, so if I'm not in a poros on Yom Yudalid, it should render me, I'm in a krach on the Yom Yudalid, I should be rendered a ben krach on Mukaf Liyomo. Because Ptur Kriyasa should be a Koveya, just like Chiyuv Kriyasa is Koveya. That's what the Rosh says. Therefore, he says, what's going to happen is because you're telling me the Makom that's Poros is Koveya Chiyuv. If I'm in a Makom that's Poros. So that means, if I'm in a Makom that's not a Poros, so then I'm that Makom should be a Poter, insofar as Kriyasa is concerned. So therefore, if I happen to be in a Krach, which is and because I'm putter, the krach is a makom ptur kriya on your dalid, so I should be defined as what? As a ben krach. That's what he's saying. You see? That's what he's saying. Yeah. You can't have a one-sided and say that if I'm in a makom that's poros, so then it determines the chiyuv. And what about ptur? If that determines chiyuv, so if you're not in that makom, so then you're putter. So therefore, you have to say that what? That halacha can't deal with such. You can't deal with a one-sided situation. So halacha has to immediately determine on your dalid what you are. So either you're a poros on your dalid or you're a mukaf on your dalid. So when zman chiyuv eschal, the formulation is right. There's zman chiyuv eschal on your dalid, and what your status is on your dalid has to be determined equally in terms of chiyuv or ptur hamitzvah. If makom determines chiyuv mitzvah, poros determines chiyuv mitzvah, then you must have an institution of mukuf that determines ptur mitzvah. You can't have a half-sided situation. Poros is going to determine chiyuv, and what if the guy happens to the guy who's in mukuf? There's no ptur. You mean it's not even? It's an uneven halacha. If poros determines chiyuv, then mukuf determines ptur. So if I'm a makom mukuf, so I'm not in a makom chiyuv. So now I must be in a makom ptur. Makom ptur. So then the halacha is if you are in a makom ptur of mitzvasa, which is mukuf, so it's so a chalos chiyuv is chalfa tesvav. So it's mechayvim tesvav. So the Rosh says, that's the way to Yerushalmi learns Allah. The Rosh apparently wasn't too upset with Rashi's formulation with the Gavra, which he didn't bother him, that the Chiyuv is Chal before the Gavra is determined. That's an unusual type of halachic situation, but it makes sense logically. But this, he says, is not logical. To have an uneven situation is not logical. To say that there's a Makom Chiyuv, and yet the Makom Ptur has not been determined, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So therefore you have to say if there's a makom chiyuv mitzvah, pruz, then there must be a makom ptur mitzvah. Where's the makom ptur mitzvah? Mukaf. So you must be determined on that night that you're a mukaf. There's a ptur, and therefore your chiyuv is postponed till when? Till tomorrow. Oh. That's your chiyuv.
That's
what? So if you're determining makamos, so you're saying there's a makom par that's machayavim, so then there has to be must be a makom ptur. Where's the makom ptur? Makom ptur doesn't come in existence until tomorrow. Doesn't make any sense. And then once the makom, so it comes out that your definition is determined either lekriyas yedale because of the chiyuv of poros, or else it's a poter on you're putter on that, and you're determined right then and there as a ben krach.
As a ben krach.
So it comes out like you said, it's correct that yedale is really the machayev. Yedale is really the machayev in the mitzvah. But it's Machayev the poros on your dalid, and it's Doche the krach until when? Until Tesvav.
Even the guy who's there
it's Koveya. It's Koveya's Chalashem. Exactly. If there's a Chalashem poros, this is what the Russian argument is like this. If there's a Chalashem poros on your dalid, there's a Chalashem Mukaf on your dalid. You can't have a Chalashem poros without a Chalashem Mukaf. That's impossible. So therefore, there's a Chalashem Mukaf on your dalid, so he's defined as a Mukaf Liyoma. This is more precise. If there's a Chalashem poros on your dalid, there's a Chalashem Mukaf on your dalid. You can't have a halacha that works incomplete. That's a half-hearted halacha. You can say like this, that there's a Chalashem poros, but there's no Chalashem Mukaf until the next day. What is impossible?
It doesn't matter whether
poros is chiyuv and mukaf is ptur. So there's a Chalashem poros on your dalid, there's a Chalashem mukaf on your dalid. So it comes out that on your dalid he's kavua as a mukaf. If he's kavua as a mukaf, so when is his chiyuv? His chiyuv is 15. That's just like saying there's a pruz ben yomo, so if he's not in the pruz on that day, he has a mukaf ben yomo. That's what Rashi said.
Okay, the first thing we did was the Ramban. The Svar of the Ramban. What is Ramban's? The Ramban's are the Machlokes Ramban and the Balamor.
So he said, according to the Balamor learns like Rashi, it comes out that there are two systems. There's a pris binyomo, and then there's a regular pris. There's a mukaf binyomo, and there's a regular mukaf. So if you're a regular mukaf and you go to the pris, so the definition of pris binyomo overrides the definition of being a mukaf. Okay? The basic definition of being a mukaf. So it's two systems. Like we said yesterday, two systems, but the definition of pris binyomo is superior to the definition of being a regular krach. But however, let's say for instance you're a regular pruz and you go to the krach and now you plan to come back before the 15th, so then of course you're a regular pruz. But if you plan to stay there, so then what happens? Then you obtain the definition of a krach ben yomo. Krach ben yomo rules out the definition of a pruz. That's what the Balmas says. What does that have to do with what he intends to do? The Ramban didn't like that. Because Ramban thought that's a very crude formulation. Why should I say that? One, the pruz ben yomo is superior to the regular pruz, to the regular krach, to the regular definition. Is it like there's a regular underlying definition, and then there's a ben yomo definition. And the ben yomo definition prevails over the regular one. What kind of a system of Allah is that? So Ramban said like this. Ramban said that it's not a halacha that the pruz ben yomo is superior. The halacha is that when he is a pruz ben yomo, he's defined as abandoning his former status of krach. It's an abandonment. That's why the Ramban says, that's why the Rif holds, that it depends on Dait Delach or Ein Dait Delach. Because that's the Radio Sugya Makam Shinoda. Which means that what? That Dait Delach means you didn't abandon, and Ein Dait Delach means that you did abandon. So the Ramban says, that's why the Balamar's Kasha is not Kasha. Because the Rif, and this is really the ingeniousness of the Ramban, to show you exactly precisely where the Rif came up with this halacha. He's right, it's the only place it came from Magen Shnagel. But it's based upon the definition in this sugya that a pruz ben yomo is not just a mechanism that outrules the underlying criteria of citizenship and takes precedence over the other definition. But it's a halacha that it defines him as abandoning. A pruz ben yomo is one who abandons his former status, his former place. He's considered abandoning. If he's considered abandoning, so then what? So then it has to be Ein Dait Delach. That's the Ramban. Okay. Next point we took up is in the Ramban sheet himself, just trying to work it out. How does it work out that he's a Benny or he's in the Krach on the 14th, so somehow or other, if he's a Benny on the 14th and he lands on the 14th, then he comes on the 15th to the Krach. So according to Ramban, he's going to have to land again. Why should I have to land again? This just doesn't make any sense. Sounds crazy. Why should he? It was Yetzer already. Okay? So you're going to tell me because since he's there on the 15th, he becomes a mukaf. So it's one gavra with two definitions. He's like another gavra. If that's the case, so why is he putter? Why is the Benny a putter on the 14th? If the definition didn't arrive till the 15th. So why is the Benny a putter on the 14th? And what does that have to do with the only because he intends to stay there on the 15th? And if he doesn't tend to stay there on the 15th, he's going to be chayav on the 14th. How does that work? You can tell me that there's my, so you're apparently going to say like a rush, that the 14th is the kaveya. So the 14th is the kaveya, so he landed already on the 14th in the pruz, as a pruz. So why does he have to land again on the 15th? 14th was kaveya, is it prosy? In the case where he was in the prosy on the 14th, now he goes in the 15th. It doesn't work out. These cases don't work out. So we say as follows, that there are, that in Kriyas and Megillah, really, the 14th is Chayev and the 15th is Chayev. Both days are really Chayev. The only thing is the Kiyum Kriyasa for both days in the Prazim is on the 14th. The Kiyum Kriyasa for both days in Mukaf in Batei Rechoma is really on the 15th. But actually each day has a Chayev Kriyasa Megillah. So now it works out very nicely. That if the person is a Ben Ir, Shehalach Lekrach, and according to Ramban's definition, is very nice because he has to abandon his status of ear. So let's say he's there on the 14th. On the 14th, he gets up in the morning, he's confronted with a Chiyuv Kriya. So now he has to determine whether he's a Ben Krach or Ben Ir. So we say that if he intends to stay there on the 15th, then and only then it's Daito, it's Ein Daito Lachzor. So then if it's Ein Daito Lachzor Bizman Kiyum Mitzvoso, so then he could be defined as a Ben Krach. But if it's Daito Lachzor Kodam Kizman Kiyum Mitzvoso, he definitely can't be defined as a Ben Krach. That would be absurd. Because this whole definition of a Pruz Ben Yom and Mukav Ben Yom is the definition as far as Kriyas and Megillah is concerned. So if he's not going to be, if he's not going to remain there, so now he's defined as a Ben Ir on the 14th. Okay? That's why he's defined as a Ben Ir on the 14th. Now, let's take another case. Now, let's say, for instance, a person... Let's say, for instance, a person's a Benir on the 14th, and he landed on the 14th. But now, on the 15th, he goes into the Krach, so he's going to be Chayiv, according to Ramban, Lakan, Lakan. Why? Because on the 15th in the morning, he's confronted with the Chayiv Kriyas on Megillah. So if he's not in the Krach, so we say his Kiyum took place on the 14th. But you can't say if he's in the Krach on the 15th, Bizman Chi of Kriyasa, that now he's defined as a ben, as a pruz, and he was Yotze that Chiyav with yesterday's laning. That's impossible. So therefore he's going to have to be Chayav to lane on both days. He'll be Chayav to lane on both days. What we're saying is that both days of Purim are Chayav and Kriya. But the realization for the first day is in the Prazim, and for the Mekuffin the realization of the Chi of Kriya is on the second day. What I'm saying is the kriya for the first on the first day for the prosim is a kriya not just for the 14th. It's a kriya for the 15th too. And a patasim for the 15th. Okay, a riot to the svara. A riot to the svara is the locha and tough reish peches ches. And if a benir couldn't read it on the 14th, then even though he doesn't go to a krach, he reads it on the 15th. I was going to say without a bracha, but that's something because it's not the mitzvah kitzurasa. But he still, it's not the mitzvah kitzurasa, but still he has a chi of kriya and a kiyum kriya on the 15th. So it shows you really that you have to read on the 14th and you have to read on the 15th. The only thing is that a benir, his chiyav on the 15th, is fulfilled through the kriya of the 14th. The kriya of the 14th was already for the 15th too. So that's the case, so that the halacha is perfect. That's tough reish pei ches ches. Yeshkaya, who's right there? All right, very good. What? It's good. Just pray for the kasha and the answer. Very good. More for the answer, but anyways, very good. That's the riot for this whole pshat. That's 100% riot for the pshat. Okay, if you're going to say that the benir is only chayav on the 14th, so it's crazy. He's crazy. He's reading on the 15th. It's mishgas. It's below bracha. It's below bracha because it's not the mitzvah kitzurasa, so you can't make a bracha. But it's that's something else. The rivet. Why does the rivet? Now, just one more point. The rivet holds. That what? The rivet holds that if you're a ben ear and you're in the krach, so you could what? So you could read in the krach on the 14th. But if you're a ben krach, if you're ben krach and you leave the krach, you can't read in the 15th outside of the krach. But you can read on the 15th, on the 14th, in the krach, a kriya of the ear. Why? What's the difference? The reason is because krakim amukofim choma are an entity. Ear's not an entity. It's nothing. It's nothing. So there's no halacha of a kriya shel ear because it's just a kriya. There's nothing there. It's the absence. It's an absence. You know what I mean? This is anisht. Okay. But in the kriya of the krakim is a new chal Hashem, but they are a chom is a chal Hashem. It's a pasuk in the Torah. It's a new entity. So therefore, the kriya shel bate arechoma is a separate. He holds the rivet happens all the way. Not everybody agrees with it, but he holds it's a separate kriya of a kriya bate arechoma. So it must be in the bate arechoma. But you can't say a kriya of an ear has to be in an ear. There's no such thing as an ear. The bate arechoma doesn't taste mafki yet. Doesn't do anything about it. It's a kriya. That's the difference.
Tell me a lie. It's your sister. So he says no. He says gam omna achosi bas avi achlo basimi. So Ramban says any day amahwa snatzel sazeh. What kind of answer? What kind of answer is this? She happens to be also. She's your wife. Who cares? She's related to you. What's this v'gam omna? So Ramban doesn't answer. I said pshat is that the pshat is like this: that when you lie to somebody, there's two things. First of all, you're giving him a false information, so you're causing him to act on false information. That's bad. But there's something else. Lying to somebody, you take away from his dignity. You show him that he's not important. You don't consider him important enough to tell him the truth. So it really is a disparaging type of thing. You're degrading him by telling him a lie. So that's what Avram said. He said, with regard to telling you something that's false, in order and basing your action on that I couldn't help because no choice because I thought they're going to kill me. But I want you to know I wouldn't tell you a total lie. I didn't really lie to you. In fact, is true that she's my sister. So that took away from the degradation, the lack of consideration. A person, when you lie to somebody, it's not just that the person's upset because of the fact.